What's going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode of the podcast. Today we're going to talk about gluconeogenesis. It's a big word, and it's just something that doesn't get talked about enough. That's why in the title of this, right, what I think I'm going to title it is The Forgotten Metabolic Pathway, because most of you probably never heard of it, unless you're in like a biology field or chemistry or maybe even exercise science field. You probably never really spend too much time on it. And like I said, most of you probably don't even know what it is. So gluconeogenesis is the process by which your body synthesizes non-carbohydrate sources into glucose, right? Mainly protein and fat. Normally what your body does is, our main fuel source is through glycolysis, which is using carbs to create glucose, put it in the bloodstream, use it for activity, brain function, all that stuff. I mainly want to talk about gluconeogenesis in terms of low-carb diets because, again, it's kind of a topic that gets glossed over. So when we're looking at dieting systems, you know, we can take a typical American diet, which involves, you know, a lot of meat, fat, carbs, just any diet in general. Anyone who's eating carbs, your main source of energy is coming through glycolysis, right? And then the conversation kind of shifts into ketosis, which is similar to gluconeogenesis in that you're using non-carb sources for energy, but it's like it really only gets active. Ketosis really only happens when you're in like a deep fasted state or in a super, super low carb, high fat type of situation. Okay. And a lot of people think that they're doing a keto diet just by doing low carb, and that's not the case at all. Right. So, normal diet where you're eating substantial amount of carbs, you're using glycolysis, you go to low carb, you're mainly operating in glycolysis and maybe gluconeogenesis depending on the amount of carbs you're eating, your own subjective genetics, and how your body responds to certain diets in the first place. And then when you drop down even more to almost a no-carb, high-protein, high-fat diet, then you might be entering ketosis. And even then, you really can't tell unless you use, like, they have, like, these certain monitors you can use. You can use, like, a pee stick. Like you pee on it and it'll tell you if you're in ketosis or not, like a pregnancy test or something. But besides that, low carb diets, you're probably in gluconeogenesis, and a lot of people don't talk about it. I'm going to keep saying people don't even know what it is, right? It's a big word. No one's ever heard of it. So what we want to remember when we're doing or jumping into low carb situations is we're not always in ketosis, right? Some will say, well, I'm doing keto. They basically just mean they're in a low carb diet, right? And even on a low carb, you're still eating carbs, right? So they're just lower. So you're still performing glycolysis and then maybe gluconeogenesis depending on your ratio. But very rarely is someone on a low carb diet actually in ketosis, right? Like I said, unless you're actually monitoring these things, you're not going to really know if you're in ketosis or not. Unless you're peeing on a stick multiple times a day, you're not going to know. And that's why I don't necessarily think it's the best dieting system out there. First of all, you're really going to eat no carb, low carb your whole life. I've talked about this before. It's just not maintainable for the average person. There's some health nerds out there that like to mess around with these things. They like to, you know, biohack, quote unquote, and see how their body reacts. And that's cool. But for the average person, the average American, going keto, I don't think is maintainable at all. I think it's like any other extreme dieting system, like carnivore, vegan. You might try it for a while. You might feel a little bit better. But eventually, everything is going to come back to eating a well-balanced diet and putting in these traits in your diet that you know affect you in certain ways, right? If you know you're really carb sensitive, you don't have to go completely no carb. You can carb cycle, you can have, you know, lower carb days, higher carb days. You know, there's different ways around it, right? I do think everyone should experiment and see what works for them, because dieting is a very highly nuanced issue. There's no perfect dieting system. There's no perfect workout system either. You need to see what your body responds to and how it responds, right? So I think everyone should try low carb, see how you feel. People should try going plant-based, maybe even try carnivore if you want to. You need to mess around with these things to see what works. But anyway, getting back to the main point about gluconeogenesis, it's kind of the forgotten metabolic pathway. No one seems to really talk about it enough, and I'm not really sure why. It goes from well-balanced diet, including carbs, all the way to ketosis in like a flash. It's real quick. And they kind of just skip over the topic of gluconeogenesis. So the idea that low-carb diets are going to completely get rid of like glucose in your bloodstream is just not true, right? Gluconeogenesis, like I said, is the process by which your body is synthesizing non-carbohydrate sources into glucose in your bloodstream. So it's taking protein and fat, namely, and turning it into sugar in your bloodstream. Okay, whether you're on a low carb diet or not, you're going to have sugar in your bloodstream unless you're constantly in ketosis, but a constant state of ketosis is almost unattainable, right? Unless, like I said, unless you're peeing on a stick multiple times a day and it's telling you are in ketosis, you're not going to be in ketosis all the time. Our body needs sugar to operate, especially our brain, okay? So it's kind of, gluconeogenesis is kind of a really cool evolutionary adaptation when you think about it, right? In situations where food was scarce, we would take maybe the meat from an animal and the fat and whatever we were eating back in the Paleolithic days, and our bodies would make sugar out of it. It's kind of cool, right? You wouldn't think of a piece of meat as a carb source, but when your body needs it, it can kind of transmute it into glucose in your body, which is really, really cool when you think about it. It's kind of an amazing evolutionary adaptation that went on. But I'm not sure why gluconeogenesis doesn't get talked about enough. I think maybe it's just not as sexy as the other, dieting systems. Hey, you can, like I said, one end of the spectrum, hey, you can eat all the carbs you want, you can do this, you just be balanced, be in a caloric deficit, and you're good to go. And then the conversation switches immediately to keto, which has done a great job of marketing itself, but it's just simply not maintainable for people. And what they consider keto, like I said, is not actual ketosis. You're most likely in gluconeogenesis. So maybe it's just a marketing issue, honestly, that it, hasn't gotten the same attention, or just the general public hasn't been informed about it because there's not too much money to be made off of it, right? If you think about it, people like these fad diets, these cultural trendy changes in dieting and health and fitness happens almost on a yearly basis, it seems like. There's the paleo diet, there's the vegan, there's carnivore, there's Mediterranean, there's keto, but no one's talking about a gluconeogenesis diet, right? I think because maybe your body's just doing it anyway, so there's not much to really market about it, but it's interesting to see the cultural shift from, all these weird little fad diets popping up, and from when we were preaching like a well-balanced approach to everything. Now you have vegans, you have carnivores, you have people trying to eat no carbs at all. Keto is a really high fat diet as well. You have people eating paleo, like trying to eat like a caveman as much as they can. There's part of the problem is the amount of total information coming at people, especially consumers, right? Especially the way these things are marketed, keto in particular. You see people, I had amazing results on keto. I lost X amount of pounds in this much time. But is it really maintainable in the long run for our culture? Hang on, I'm getting some pop-ups on the computer here. None of these systems seem to be very maintainable, right? Keto, like I said, is a very high fat, high protein, pretty much no carb at all. You're not supposed to eat carbs. And it's kind of weird how people gravitate towards these weird diets, because on paper, you know it's not maintainable. Like, you can look at something like that and be like, am I really going to be able to do this the rest of my life? No. Can I use it as a tool to lose X amount of pounds? Yeah, probably. But what happens after that? Right? Say your goal is to lose 30 pounds. You go on keto. You lose the weight. But now you're kind of stuck, right? You're kind of scared to jump back into a well-balanced diet, which I think everyone wants to have, right? And that nobody, if you ask anybody who does keto, I don't think any of them would really want to do it forever. You know, it seems like they've mistaken this dieting tool, which it should be, low carb, no carb, carb cycling. It should be a tool in your dieting system. It shouldn't be the end all be all of what you put into your body, right? So it's weird to see people jump into these systems without really thinking it through or thinking in the long term. Now I'll get back to gluconeogenesis in a second, but the biggest problem I think we're facing is misinformation as well as uninformation, right? People are uninformed and they're also misinformed. It's common for people to see the results of a diet and in their mind think, I have to do this, right? That's why we want proof when we're looking at products, right? Does this product work? Does the keto diet work? I need to see proof. I need to see that people have actually lost weight on this. So if I buy a, you know, keto diet system or a keto cookbook or something like that, I don't want to be wasting my money. But the failure to think in the long term, the failure to understand that the best dieting system is one that's going to give you longevity, and it's going to give you longevity in terms of being able to follow it for a long time. Okay, it's not, the best diet is not the one that gives you the best results. Let me say that again. The best diet is not one that's going to give you the best results. The best diet is the one that you're going to follow for a long time. One that can give you sustainable living habits for a long time to come, right? For example, when people cut out gluten, that's kind of an easy shift to make, right? They make a ton of gluten-free pasta, gluten-free bread now. But when we're talking about these really, really extreme systems like keto or carnivore or even vegan for that matter, it is really difficult to maintain that for a prolonged period of time. Most people who go vegan, I think the stats say something like 85% of them quit within the first year. They just can't do it. It's hard, especially when you don't have the best knowledge of nutrition or a background in biology or chemistry. The average person trying to jump into an extreme dieting system is like such a recipe for disaster, because they simply don't know what they're doing. I've had people ask me all the time about vegan and different diets. I'm like, you don't know what you're doing. And you said you're not going to work with a dietitian. You're not going to consult with a nutritionist. You're just kind of trying to jump in and see what happens because you saw a few body transformation pics from this whatever diet they want to jump into. If a diet is marketed really well, it's probably not the best thing for you to jump into. If you're seeing it all over the news, you're seeing it in the magazines, you're seeing it on social media, you're seeing people come up and selling their own versions of this diet, it's probably not the best. It's just going to be another one of those fad diets that gets lost in history that helped a few people lose a few pounds, mainly because it put them in a caloric deficit, not because of anything magical, right? That's the problem with these low-carb diets. You're losing weight on a low-carb diet because it's a very restrictive system, especially keto. If all you can eat is high-protein, high-fat, the odds of you having the same caloric intake that you're currently at are very low. So naturally, your caloric intake is going to go down, which means you're going to lose weight. So is it it's hard to tell based on people's results. Was it really the no carb that did it, or was it the total lack of calories that they put themselves into, right? It was it the being in ketosis all the time, or was it the fact that they're eating half the normal calories they were used to eating? It's hard to tell. You can't tell just by someone's body transformation picture. You can't tell just by what they say and how they feel. Okay. I do think there's some good studies about ketosis being good for the brain. You know, people on low carb diets say they have better mental clarity, and I've done it myself, and I would have to agree with that too. The constant spike in blood sugar that we tend to put ourselves through with a regular diet can cause certain issues to arise, right? Like brain fog, you know, just overall energy going up and down. It's kind of a roller coaster. When you enter a lower carb or no carb system, your blood sugar is pretty much the same all day. I mean, eating meat, or just protein and fat, it still has a an insulin effect in your body, right? Your body's still going to release insulin, but the total spike in your blood sugar is not going to be the same. So the main point being it's people have subjective results with different things, right? Some people went vegan and never looked back because they felt great, it worked, they lost weight, they feel great, inflammation went down, that sort of thing. Same thing with carnivore. People cut out the carbs, they just ate meat, and now their mental clarity is better, their blood sugar is better, their autoimmune issues are being resolved. But if we're looking at dieting from a weight loss perspective, because that's the way most people tend to look at it, it's hard to tell if it's the lack of carbs or the lack of calories that are giving people results. And it's a very important distinction to make. I always tell people they need to start with tracking everything, right? It's kind of a pain in the ass, but it's going to give you a good idea of food values. It's going to give you a good idea of how much food you're actually eating in a day. And it's going to put a number on the food you're eating, right? It makes it so much more scientific and easy to fix when it's a number, right? If you're looking at your total amount of calories, say, hey, I'm overweight, I'm eating 2,000 calories, I need to eat less or I need to burn more calories. So if I eat the same, but I burn 250 more calories a day, naturally it's going to come down. Right? It makes it so much easier to, excuse me, to get your weight where you want it to go when you have a number to hit, right? Instead of just kind of aimlessly trying to diet down, aimlessly cutting out certain foods, aimlessly drastically cutting your calories way down, instead of taking a really balanced and scientific approach to it. That's why people fail at dieting all the time, more often than not, right? So anyway, how does this relate back to gluconeogenesis? Well, I call it the forgotten metabolic pathway in this title because people forget about it, right? They're assuming on their no low carb diet that they're in ketosis, or they're not putting any, there's no sugar in their bloodstream at all, right? There's no sugar, there's no carb. My blood sugar is really low, and it's simply not the truth. Okay, your body's converting fat and protein into glucose for you because you're not providing enough of it from the direct sources like carbs and starches and that sort of thing. So, just to reiterate, unless you're peeing on a stick and seeing that you're constantly in ketosis throughout the day, you're in gluconeogenesis most likely, or glycolysis still. Especially if you're on low carb. A low carb diet still has carbs in it. Okay, so there's still sugar being put out into your bloodstream. And the results you're getting on a low carb diet are coming from the lack of calories, right? If you're cutting down the one of the three macronutrients down by 80-85% of your normal intake, you're cutting out a lot of calories throughout the day than you would normally be eating, whether it's protein, fats, or carbs. if you're cutting out 85% of one of those things, your calories are going to go way down. Okay. Especially if it's fat. Back in the day, fat was the enemy. People said, avoid fat at all costs. And the reason being is fat has more calories per gram than the other two macronutrients, proteins and carbs. So not that people eat a ton of fat, but if you're cutting it out almost completely, that's a lot more calories per gram and thus more calories that you're cutting out per day than with the other two macronutrients, right? The reason why low-carb diets work is because carbs are usually the highest amount of source of calories that people are eating in a given day, right? Most of their calories are coming from some sort of carb or starch source. So if you cut that down by 85%, your calories in that day are going to go way down, right? And that's why people are losing the weight, most likely. Okay, there are studies showing people respond differently to carbs. Obviously, everybody's genetically different. There's subjective reactions to certain diets, certain stimuli. But if you really look at it, most of these people are losing weight on a low-carb, no-carb diet because of the lack of calories, okay? Especially when coupled with increased exercise, you know, the weight is going to fly off, but it's not maintainable for the average person. Unless you're a health nut, unless you're really committed to it, unless you just absolutely fall in love with how you feel on a low-carb or no-carb diet, eventually you're going to have to come back to a balanced dieting approach, okay? And that's where people kind of fall into a different pit of despair, is because, you know, I went on low carb, I lost 30 to 40 pounds or whatever. Now what? I don't want to do low carb forever. I don't want to do no carb forever. I don't want to try and eat keto forever. What do I do now? And that's the problem with these fad dieting systems. It's the problem with every fad dieting system that's ever popped up, is there's no longevity included in the equation of that diet. Okay, you can do it for a year and lose the weight you want, but then what? Then you're left with, you know, there's all these question marks, all this uncertainty, and then you have to try and figure it out from there. And again, people aren't informed, they're not educated on these topics. They didn't get a degree in it, they didn't go to school for it. Most people who are dieting don't have a nutritionist certification. If they did, they probably wouldn't need to diet. So we're leaving the average person and the average consumer in this kind of just really like uncertain floating space between dieting systems and questioning things about their own health. So really what we want to do is focus on balance. That's what I've always been telling people. It's what I used to tell clients, that's what I used to tell friends. It has to come back to balance. Balance is the only thing that's going to be maintainable in the long run, right? It's why these unbalanced diets are not a long-term thing, because they're, by their very nature, they're unbalanced, right? Cutting out a certain macronutrient completely, like carbs, the odds of you maintaining that for years to come is extremely low, right? So we like extreme things. We're kind of attracted to extreme things. Extreme things make things happen, right? You know, these extreme diets, people lose weight. They lose weight fast because they're extreme. That's why they work, but that's also why they're not maintainable. Any sort of volatile action you throw into your life is going to shake something up. It's going to change something, but it's not going to necessarily give you the long-term benefits that you think it will, right? We have a really hard time thinking long-term with these things. And I think now more than ever, the problem isn't people being unable to lose the weight. It's the problem of keeping the weight off and being healthy for years and decades to come, right? The losing weight on paper is the easy part. I know some people struggle with it, but it's move more, eat less, or you can jump into one of these extreme fad diets and go from there, right? You lose the weight, But then the bigger problem comes up. How do I maintain this weight? How do I figure out how to take care of my health after I've dieted down and I don't want to be in this restrictive system anymore? That's the bigger problem now, right? There's so much information out there, right? If you have trouble losing weight, there's so many free, the internet is your friend. There's so many free resources, free, honestly, free coaching out there. If you want to, you can work with a nutritionist. They're not that expensive if you have the money. But other than that, I mean, there's so many free resources for you, okay? Losing weight is not this really complex issue. It's just not. But how to be healthy for the rest of your life, that's a complex issue. That's the hard part, okay? So that's really the biggest problem people are running into. It's not how do I lose the weight, it's how do I keep it off, how do I be healthy forever, or quote-unquote healthy forever. So as this relates back to gluconeogenesis, that's really what your body's doing in these low-carb systems, right? You're really not, in a way, cutting out carbs completely because there's still glucose being put into your bloodstream because your body is changing. It's using other sources to create glucose. So while you're on a low-carb diet, you really don't, your bloodstream doesn't really honestly have a lack of carbs or glucose in it because your body is changing proteins and fats into glucose for you. Okay, so getting back to my earlier point, it is not the carbs that are causing the issue. It's the lack of calories that you have now because you're jumping into a system that restricts carbs either a lot or completely. The amount of calories you're eating is so much less than you normally would, right? And gluconeogenesis is the process. You can think about it almost as the reverse of glycolysis, right? Glycolysis is taking starches and carbs, turning it into glucose in your bloodstream. This is like the opposite, right? Fats and proteins are being transformed into glucose in your bloodstream. So, and then ketosis, like I said earlier, doesn't really happen until you're in a deep fasted state or in a super, super low carb or like no carb at all type situation for a prolonged period of time. And even then, it's rare. So when we're thinking about gluconeogenesis, you want to think of the reasons that you're jumping into a low carb situation in the first place. If it's to keep your blood sugar low, then you're kind of in the wrong because your body's making sugar for you anyway, right? If it's to lose weight, then you have to think, am I going to lose the weight because of the carbs, or am I just dropping my calories down so low that it's physically impossible for me to not lose weight while doing this, right? You have to try and stay away from unbalanced approaches to things if you want longevity for your health, right? And like I said, unless you're the type of person that can really do low carb, no carb for the rest of your life, then go for it. If you feel great on it, you think you can maintain it, good, go for it. But like I said, the average person, the average consumer, the average person working a 9-to-5 who has a family, has kids, has a mortgage and, you know, things to pay off, they're trying to make, they want something as uncomplicated as possible. And something that's uncomplicated is going to be balanced. Okay? These extreme approaches to dieting are not good for the masses, right? In a way, you could say it makes things simpler, but simplicity doesn't always equal something that's going to have longevity, right? It's simple to eat no carbs, right? You just avoid them. You just don't eat them. On paper, it's simple. Just eat meat. Just eat vegetables. You know, ones that are non-starchy. Or if you're trying to do keto, or carnivore, you know, just eat meat, just eat animal products, no carbs, no fruits, no vegetables. That's very uncomplicated, but it's also extreme. It's simple, but there's no longevity in that system for the average person, right? So this episode was meant to kind of just inform people that gluconeogenesis is taking place whether you like it or not, whether you're planning it or not, right? Your body's making glucose whether you want it to or not. Unless you're in a deep fasted, deep ketosis state, you're doing glycolysis, which is carbs to glucose, or gluconeogenesis, which is fats and proteins converted to glucose for your body to use. So yeah, just to sum up, keep things uncomplicated for yourself. Try to be as balanced as possible. Yeah, just it's disheartening to see, because there's things are marketed really well, and that's not always a good thing. It will always come back to having a balanced approach to your health. Okay, so I don't want to keep this episode too long. I hope it was informative. I hope to help some of you out. If anything, some of you learned a new word today. So gluconeogenesis is, you know, it's a big word, but happens all the time. It happens in our bodies. And so yeah, I hope this helps some of you out. And I will see you on the next one.